Rick Fox, of course, is an NBA analyst, former player, and also owner of Echo Fox, and I'm trying to understand what that is, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Mr. Fox, how are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
We're not bad. This has been dull, this final, although last night's game was, I think, a little bit more entertaining, although, I mean, I don't know. I guess the outcome hasn't been in doubt in my mind since game one. This concept of putting together a super team, are you okay with it, or does something about it bug you?
Well, I'm okay with it because it worked on my behalf going all the way back.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to be hypocritical about it. But what I would point out is that it's not something that's new. It's something that the fans of the other, usually the other 27 or 8 teams in the league are really take a disinterest in, because they're not one of the teams that has the two or three, you know, biggest and baddest players in the game on that roster. So if we look back in the Lakers and the Celtics in the 80s, a lot of that was mirrored a lot of what we're seeing here. The Bulls were very dominant with Kukoc, Scottie Pittman, Dennis Rodman, Michael Jordan. And that was a pretty dominant team. The Heat as of late, and now we see the Warriors and the Cavs, really emulating a lot of what we think of when we think of, you know, these super teams. But they don't always work. I was on a 2004 super team with Karl Malone, Gary Payton, Kobe, and Shaq that lost in the NBA Finals to the Detroit Pistons, mm-hmm. There was nothing super about them other than they were a super team. A composition of a lot of great individual players, but no real superstars. And they took us down. So I think it's always interesting to follow. You know, you mentioned that it was never in doubt for you from game one. I don't think it was ever in doubt for me personally. Once I saw Kevin Durant sign with the Golden State Warriors.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, fair enough. I mean, yeah. The one point I would make here, Rick, is that may be the first time anybody has rattled off names on the roster of the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan got fourth billing.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that as I was going down the list. Like, who was the other guy? Yeah. One more guy. Who was it?
Maybe you were going alphabetical. We'll give you the benefit of the doubt.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I thought that was quite interesting.
So the two concerning points of last night, Rick, for me, was at the end of the first quarter when they put LeBron on the bench to give him a little bit of a rest, and Golden State reeled off 10 straight. And then, I mean, how do you blow I know it's the NBA. I know there's three-point plays. How do you blow 7 points like they did at the end of the game? And how is LeBron not taking all the shots?
Yeah, I know, right? I think LeBron's greatest gift, and also maybe at times his greatest Achilles heel, is his unselfishness, right? His willingness to make the right play, his willingness to move the basketball. He's done that his entire career, and unfortunately, in that 8-0, deficit there, where they, not only could they not score, but whoever was taking the shots, they weren't named LeBron James until the last one. They got deflected mm-hmm. by Iguodala. So there are other warranted players on that team that are great players, and the likes of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. So I don't look at it and say that there weren't competent options other than LeBron. I just think it all. At the end of the day, I can't imagine a game where Michael Jordan isn't, taking or controlling at least those last few minutes, or Kobe Bryant or Larry Bird, like the greats that have come through the game. They not only demand the ball, they go down, they take you across the finish line, or they go down short, because they've left it out there. It's why they're superstars, right? It's why mm-hmm. they get paid the money they get paid. It's why they gain the stardom. They're willing to take the praise and the criticism.
As a guy who's been involved in basketball literally all your life, are you less enthused by the means that teams are put together today? And you've acknowledged that you played on one in L.A. and won championships doing so. But does it make the NBA season a little less attractive to you?
Yes, if we spread it out across, the entirety of a regular season, where you're thinking of nights where you'd like to come home and see a good matchup, but yet maybe the matchup is really one star versus another star, which they're, thankfully there are a lot of stars in the game. When we think of James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Kawhi Leonard, there's stars on teams. Giannis Antetokounmpo. You see them out there, but what I do miss is I do miss the parity. I do miss the balance with which we've seen eras of basketball in the NBA really deliver great basketball from night to night, and it was more about what did the team bring to the table on a given night versus, okay, I'm just here to watch this one individual do his thing. Yes, I like celebrating, but at the same time, as a basketball purist who understands the nuances, I do see the void in just great basketball, and basketball is a team sport.
Now, on that point then, this huge shift to playing for the three-point shot has changed the perspective as well. Has that changed your thought about how the game is played? Because, last night even, Cleveland tried to play half court, and there's no way that Golden State wants to play half court.
No, and I thought it was the right move. I thought they could have even moved slower, mm-hmm. And maybe they will. Maybe they will. The game still ended up in 113, 50, somewhere in there. Like it was up there still. They need to play this game, against the Warriors, where you're fighting to be the first team to 100, but the game clock may have like 10 seconds left on it. So, I that's the only way they can be in a game with the Warriors right now. But as for the three-point shot, that's the way of the league right now, the analytics and the percentages. And I think it's more than anything, it has to do more with the defensive end of the floor more than the offensive end of the floor. If you think of the Cavs as they were constructed, so much of what LeBron, I think, or the GM, David, and LeBron, I always throw him in there because, obviously he was very vocal about needing more, is they were chasing the offensive end of the floor. They were trying to match offensive power to Golden State Warriors, when at the end of the day they really needed defensive improvement, and they never got to that. And so now, can they outscore the Warriors? No. And unfortunately, they don't have the right personnel to defend the Warriors. And that would have been the better shot for me if I was thinking, looking at offensively, Kyrie, Kevin Love, and again, coming in third place, LeBron James. Mm-hmm. For some reason, they keep ranking all these superstars like third or fourth, in the case of Michael Jordan with the Bulls. But you have enough scoring. You need a supporting cast that does the other things defensively, rebounds the basketball. And never got to that. They have they have Kyle Korver and Channing Frye. Mm-hmm. They have guys that shoot the basketball, but not a whole lot of defensive oomph, as you would call it.
Right.
The dilemma that I see in this, Rick, is that what we are now developing in college basketball are shooters, as opposed to guys that are well-rounded basketball players. And they are, and I understand you need at least one or two of those guys on the floor, but it is becoming a three-point dominated game. And if you can't shoot the three, then you're probably not going to have any level of significant success. The Toronto Raptors are a perfect example of that. I don't know how much better they would be if they had a guy who legitimately could shoot threes consistently, but certainly they believe that they have. That's one of the things they're going out to get this offseason. Is that problematic as we watch this game? Because we've seen the development of the three-point shot. I can remember when it didn't exist. I remember when it came in, both in college basketball and in the NCAA. But today it has become not just an integral part of the offense, it's become almost the most important part of the offense.
Right. Well, there'll be an issue as soon as another Shaquille O'Neal shows up, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or a few big men in the game that can dominate the paint and force the pace to shift from an inside-out play style,
yeah,
as opposed to an outside-in. Tempo can be controlled. Like the Bull teams, our Laker teams that played and ran and operated the triangle system that really was a five-man, cohesive attack on the offensive and defensive end of the floor. We got to that kind of cohesion and discipline. discipline and tempo control through a system of basketball. Right now, the system is everyone, you know, spreads out and penetrates kicks, creates open shots for each other, shoots the three ball. But not everyone's the Golden State Warriors. So everyone's chasing the Golden State Warriors now. But they have Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, probably the three best shooters in the game. Mm-hmm. So just because the style of play that's successful is shoot threes, you gotta have people that can actually make threes. Anybody can shoot them.
Yeah.
Can you make them? And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing average teams thinking they can become better to good to great teams if they just shoot a bunch of threes. Well, that's why we get all the blowouts. That's why if you go through the NBA playoffs this season, we see no real close contested games.
That's true.
Because everyone comes out and tries to you know match the other one from the 3-point line. But really, how many teams can actually do that?
Is there an answer to – would you like to see – let me start with this question. Would you like to see fewer threes shot in NBA games?
I'd like to see more threes go in that are shot.
All right.
In other words, I don't think it's for everyone. I don't think everyone should be a three-point shooter. Like in my era, you didn't get to shoot the three just because they could make – 2 out of 12, you know, like, I mean, it's you have big men that have figured out that they can sort of across the board. What players have figured out is you get paid if you score the basketball.
Right.
You can survive in this league if you can shoot the basketball and put the ball in the basket, right? And the way of the stretch four shifted the mindset of a lot of the big players. They started to think, well, hold on, mm-hmm. you know, if I want to get on the floor, a chance for me to get on the floor is if I can actually be a threat from behind the arc. I don't even have to make a ton of them. I just need to be a threat, right? A perceived threat. We watched Marc Gasol go from a guy that never shot threes in one season, he maybe made 2 or 3 in a season, to a guy that I think made 100 or so plus threes. Now, he had to work on that. He took another additional 3 feet back from, I think, his range to get across that line. And it changed the Memphis Grizzlies. But how much did it change them? Not a whole lot. You know, it didn't improve them that much. So I just think, you know, right now, I'd like to see the game played efficiently. And I don't think the three, analytically, it's argued that it's the more efficient shot instead of a long two. I don't disagree with that. Dean Smith used to tell me all the time, you know, don't take a long two, step behind the line, right? Well, he didn't tell everybody that. I had to get the green light from him to do that. Right now, there is like everyone comes into the league and they figure I got the green light to shoot the three.
Yeah.
And until someone tells me don't shoot it. Well, enough of these coaches aren't saying, hey, man, you're not a three-point shooter.
Yeah, stop doing it until you can make them.
Stop doing it.
Yeah. I want to take a minute here before we let you go to talk about this esports digital entertainment venture that you've launched, your own gaming team, Echo Fox. I don't totally understand it. John was trying to explain it to me before you came on. I'm a little lost. Tell me about it.
Well, you're in early. So if John, I appreciate John taking us.
Doing my best, Rick. I'm doing my best, man.
Thank you, John. It is a next generation of professional sports. It's another seat at the table for a generation that's grown up. Some of them may have played. In my case, I was a basketball player, but I also was a gamer from the the time I was a kid. So I found video games before I found basketball, and it kind of ignited my competition and my competitive side. And so I kept playing them. I played them with my son. I introduced them to him. He's a game designer, so he makes video games.
Wow.
For me, as I spent my time with my son, it led me to a discovery of what has become mainstream, more mainstream than it was. The subculture of professional gaming has grown to a level where the viewership of world championships of certain leagues under certain published games have reached levels that fill the Staples Center, that fill Madison Square Garden for 2 days in a row. They're global phenomenon and events that reach levels of viewership digitally online that surpass the NBA Finals. So it is here, and so as we start to, as I continue to, and other esport owners or people that love esports continue to educate and showcase what this all is, people are now starting to discover that this is parallel track to the NBA, NFL, NHL, any of the major sporting events and leagues that you see. Esports in probably another 2 years will be more than at a seat at the table with those teams.
Wow.
With those leagues.
Hope you got to design a nice jersey or a sweater or a shirt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we do a ton of stuff. We just signed. We basically just did Equifax is my team, and esports is huge in Canada. Huge.
Yep.
Number of great teams, league and orgs out of Canada, especially out of Toronto, which I'm proud to say being from Toronto. But Equifax just signed in one league, League of Legends. It is one of the games that we compete in. We just brought back what would be like putting together Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and say Scottie Pippen or someone, five of the best historical legends from that game. We brought them together into one team, and it just shook the internet. It broke our webpage, our internet down. The amount of attention it garnered was amazing. So it's an exciting time. It's obviously as a father of a son that's has a life in the video game industry and is an esports fanatic, he turned me on to that side of it. I was already a gamer. And so it started as a father-son love affair that grew into, an industry for myself and a business for my partners. Some of the people that are my partners, one being the former chairman of VeriSign, which was, I think, for a stretch, VeriSign monopolized the internet. They were the internet. Mm-hmm. He is my business partner, one office away from me right now, and another individual, Amit. Rosado came out of the financial tech, M&A guy, and then Jace Hall, who created Warner Brothers Interactive, made all the video games for all the movies that come out.
Yeah.
So, we take this serious. Our house here is all in when it comes to esports and the ecosystem of esports, and we've been in it for 2 years now, and we'll continue to grow the space.
We will watch its development and presumably growth with interest, and we thank you for taking a few minutes to chat with us, and hopefully we'll see you soon. Thanks, Rick.
Appreciate that. Thanks, man.